Warning, the Stone Age Gamer includes a lot of bad language. Cover your mother f***ing ears.
Good evening and welcome to episode 171 of the Stone Age Gamer Podcast for the week of October 13th, 2017. I am Chris Randazzo and joining me as always is, holy crap, you're not Dan Ryan!
I'm not!
Dan had, what was it, a tonsillectomy? No, a root canal. Dan had like 35 root canals, I think, and he's unconscious in a pit somewhere bleeding while Tiff dances over him laughing.
That's impressive.
Until she realizes he has no life insurance, and then they're all fucked.
That's also terrible.
That's definitely what's happening right now. So in place of Dan, we have Dean.
Which I missed
is
you.
A very similar... Oh, I missed you too. A very similar sounding name.
I thought you were going to say a very similar sounding person. I was
no.
Just laugh hard.
No, you don't sound anything like Dan.
No, not one bit.
All right, so let's see. As part of Kike's 31 Days of Halloween, we were going to do Splatterhouse this week, but since I don't really know Splatterhouse, and Dean doesn't really know Splatterhouse, but Dan does, we're going to push Splatterhouse to next week, and we're going to do this week what I wanted to do next week, which is the Ghosts and Goblins series. Dean and I both have experience with this series, so we're going to talk about it. And before that, we go any further, here's your weekly reminder that you can email us at mail@geekade.com. Just include the word Stone Age Gamer in the subject line. You can let us know what you think of our show, what topics you would like us to discuss in the future, or just say hello, because we always want to hear from you, the listener. So, Dean, how are you?
I'm good. I've been doing a lot of stuff. I've been buying a lot of games I haven't played. The main game I've been playing, there's two games I've been playing recently. It's Golf Story for the Switch, which is absolutely amazing. And everyone who likes Mario Golf on the Game Boy Color should absolutely buy that, because it's not a carbon copy, but it's got a lot of the good points that made that release of Mario Golf so good. I'm not gonna go any more into it because we got a bunch of games to talk about. The other game I've been playing is Nier Automata, and that's
I'm sorry, did you just imply that there's some kind of time with me? I love what you just did. Dan and I won't do that. I'll ask Dan how he's doing, and then he'll talk for like 30 minutes about bullshit.
I don't want to fucking talk about puzzle dragons and whatnot.
All right.
I have my own podcast, so I put a time limit on that pretty often. I've been playing a Nier Automata, and it's fun. It's a game about being a robot, and then you realize that maybe you have feelings, and that you're more than just a robot, and then you're killing other robots, and you feel bad about it. And then it's you discovering you feel bad about killing other robots. The end. So far, anyway.
There's your back-of-the-box description.
Oh, man, I should write those. I'd be great at them. It's really weird. Like, you have to play the game three times to get the true ending to it.
That really fits in with our Ghosts and Goblins discussion.
Absolutely. It's really weird, but it's a super deep game. I think it's made by the same people that make Bayonetta. Platinum Games? Is that right?
That's Platinum.
This is in the same line as that. It's really kind of weird and stuff. And it mixes RPG and like action elements at the same time. Like, it's got God of War and Bayonetta sort of fighting mechanics, but you also can level up and like you can equip different weapons and everything to raise your stats, and you get different boosters and everything, which is like the RPG aspect of it. It's really interesting and people should play it. Don't play the PS3 one though, because I heard you have to play a lot of fishing to beat that game. Also, it jumped up in price because this game did so well and no one bought the original release on the PS3.
Wait, fishing in Nier?
In the original Nier, there's apparently a huge fishing minigame on the PS3. And
dude, does it have Big the Cat fishing?
You know what? Maybe. Maybe. Maybe there's a Big the Android. And
Android Cat? Sold.
I would love it. I'd buy 100 copies. But I haven't played... I haven't beaten it yet. I just beat it the first time so far. I'm on my second playthrough, but I really haven't had time with work and other stuff and streaming the game that we're going to be talking about, or series that we're going to be talking about.
That's true, and I actually really want to watch you go through some of that, but we'll get to that in a little bit.
Yeah.
I just kind of do a quick little catch-up on what I've been up to.
Absolutely.
Both of my kids have been sick, and so I spend a lot of time just kind of hanging out, watching TV or cartoons or playing games with John, my son. And he really wanted me to play Metroid Samus Returns again. So I played the first, hour and change of that game again. And boy, it feels so much different going through it again, because I'm so much better at killing things.
Are you doing it on a different difficulty or anything?
I just started over from just a different save file, same difficulty. I didn't really mess with anything. It was just get into it real quick. I'm not trying to beat the game. I'm just screwing around for John. And I remember the first time playing it, I was I was getting my ass kicked by little monsters could kill you pretty quickly in that. And now I'm just I've got it all down. I'm killing guys with and without the counter move super fast. Wow, this game's controls really do feel very good. Once you really get them, and I got them. I dig it. So, God, I really wish that game was on Switch though. I want to play it on my TV. I am so done with the 3DS as a thing. I just every time I hold it, I just wish I was playing whatever I was playing on it on my Switch. Because I like that giant screen and the real buttons and analog sticks, and is what it is. I've also been playing a lot of Picross S on the Switch.
How is that?
It's wonderful. It's just more Picross. There's not a lot of crazy stuff in it. Now, the only Picross E that I got on 3DS was the first one, because I just never got around to finishing it, just because I would pick up one once in a blue moon. Okay. I have dove back into that when I'm too lazy to go downstairs and get my Switch. I'll play more of a Picross E.
Okay.
And one thing, I don't know if they added these in any of the later versions of Picross E, but in Picross S, you can... one of the things in the original Mario's Picross was the way it controlled was you couldn't... The cursor wouldn't loop around to the other side. You go all the way to the end and you press
one
more time,
the edge, it
loops
right?
around. Yeah. That would drive me crazy, because I'm so used to playing it where once you hit the edge, it stops.
Yeah.
You can now change it to do that in the newer version. So you can make it so it won't loop around, which I like. I understand. If I would not want that if I had learned to play it with the looping around, because it does make things faster, but there's something about just scrolling all the way back to the other side that just kind of works for me. So you can mess with the controls a lot. The co-op mode, I mentioned this last week, I think, on the show, the co-op mode is great. Karen and I play the co-op mode together a lot.
That's a new thing, right?
I think so. I don't think that was in any of the other versions. It's just two cursors on the same...
That's
kind of
cool, though. That's,
time,
that's
just
a really chill thing you could do with someone.
It's great. We would blow through the puzzles, the two of us playing it together. And I really, really hope with all of my heart that Jupiter cranks out Picross S games the same way they did Picross E games, because they can't be much involved. It's just give me more puzzles. Give me all of the puzzles.
Absolutely, yeah.
There is a new mode in this called Mega Picross, which I don't know that I want to screw with it. Uses it'll give you big numbers for two rows at the same time.
Oh,
and it's I get it, but that's not the I don't really want to challenge myself that hard with the Picrosses. That's not why I play it. It's
right.
So I don't know. There's no shortage of content in this thing, and it was well worth the $8. But I just want them to keep cranking out more of them. So I know that I will always have infinite Picross on my Switch. The other thing I did, I picked up Stardew Valley when it came up.
How are you digging it?
I'm not digging it a ton, to be honest with you, but mostly because I've barely had any time to play it. John's not really into it, and so I'll put a little bit of time into it, and that I've played the first maybe half an hour of the game. I'm on day three. That's it. And I haven't been able to get past day three.
That's a game you sit down and it's just a huge time warp. Before you know it, hours go by. But if you don't have the time to put onto it, it's probably not at its best when you play it in short bursts. I can't see that game being all that fantastic being well, eaten
you know
that
what?
Way?
It's actually not bad in short bursts, because that was actually how I played the first chunk of it, was on commercial breaks when my wife and I were watching a show. But the problem is that I'll turn on the Switch and John says, I want to play Picross. And every time you stop the game, you have to start the day you're in over again.
Yeah.
So I have played the first 5 minutes of day three at least 7 times. And we're like, sick kid wants me to play Splatoon. That's what I'm doing. So I'll get around to Stardew Valley one of these days. But I mean, it hasn't grabbed me the way Animal Crossing grabbed me, which was like Animal Crossing sucked me in just from the get-go. And this one I bought as a curiosity, and I will put more time into it, but honestly, like, my head is just all in Picross right now. It's all I want to do is play more Picross, which is fun and makes me happy and will keep me sane until Mario Odyssey comes out. Have you seen that commercial?
No, I haven't.
There is a new Mario Odyssey commercial that is like a live action dance number, and it is amazing.
Yeah, I heard there's like a new song and stuff. Yeah, I
do
want
to check
it out.
It's the same song. It's the same song, the One Up Girl song, which is super catchy. But it's like, it's a CG Mario, and he's dancing with all these like live action dancers. It's wonderful. It is unbelievably joyous. I'm so stoked for that game.
I'm really excited. I mean, it's less than a month away now, so it's pretty exciting.
It's like 2 weeks away or something. It's October
27th, I think.
Jeez,
so.
Man. That is close.
I'm waiting for Bubsy, though.
Yeah, I got it. When is that?
They have it dated as the 31st. I don't know if that's true, though.
I'm going to get that game, and I'm not going to have any way to play it.
it's just a shit trophy. It's a trophy covered in shit for you.
Oh my god.
Trick or treat? That's the trick, motherfucker.
I wish I had, like, I do. I wish I had a PS4 so that I could play that game. But really, am I going to stop playing Mario Odyssey so I can try Bubsy? I don't friggin' think so.
No. And
like I've mentioned on the show before, like, one of my I had a couple of really big reasons to get a PlayStation 4. Like, there were, like, maybe 4 or 5 games, and one of those was Doom. And now that's coming out on Switch, so it's one less reason. And if by some strange coincidence they port Bubsy to Switch, well, I can just cross that off my list.
Hey, one less thing.
One less thing to make me plunk down the cash for a PS4. All right, let's get to our feature topic, eh? Let's be all Canadian, eh?
Eh. Maple syrup. Maple leaves. Toronto.
Overalls.
Hockey. There we go. We did it.
We did it. All right, so we're going to be talking about the Ghosts and Goblins series tonight. And I, cards on the table, I'm not prepared for this because the show I prepared for tonight was all about Splatterhouse. But when Dan had to cancel, I said, well, I can't do Splatterhouse by myself. And Dean doesn't know Splatterhouse. And I can't do it by myself because I don't know Splatterhouse. I know the series, but I've played one of them, and it was the first one, and I played it for maybe a half an hour, and that's it. So that's going to be Dan's real... He's going to be driving the episode next week, so hopefully he has teeth. So we switch things up, and now we're going to talk about the Ghosts and Goblins series. So hop in our time machines. Let's go back to 1985. The original Ghosts and Goblins hits the arcade. And is eventually ported to, according to Wikipedia, Commodore 64, Commodore Amiga, ZX Spectrum, Amstrad CPC, Atari ST, IBM PC compatibles, Commodore 16, Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance, NES, Xbox, PlayStation, PlayStation 2, PSP, iOS, and Virtual Console.
Now, I was a little bored before, so I ended up looking up some of these ports, the console ports, on YouTube. And I checked out the Commodore 16, Commodore 64, and Amiga ports. And my God.
Oh, you didn't catch the ZX Spectrum one?
No. That one I probably should have first, because I could imagine that probably looked all sorts of
fucking
weird. Oh,
there's a great video. It's let's see if it's actually there. I can't spell. Ghosts. and goblins. This is riveting, riveting podcasting right here.
The ghosts and the goblins and the goblins.
Yeah.
And
all right.
Ghosts.
So, Gaming History Source, great YouTube channel. They do these Let's Compare series, and they have one of ghosts and goblins. And basically, they just it's just a video of all the different flavors of ghosts and goblins playing in succession. So, yeah, it starts arcade. There's the DOS version. Oh boy, there's the ZX Spectrum. Oh, the ZX Spectrum is such a hideous creature.
Yeah, I could imagine how bad that would look.
It's just like, all right, the trees and Arthur are yellow. And then the leaves and the ground are green, and that's pretty much it. Oh, he looks like he's walking by. Yeah, you've just fought the boss, which was on a white background. And, oh my god, it's just now he's on level 2 and everything's blue. This is beautiful. All right, so Ghosts and Goblins. If by some reason you are not familiar with this series, Ghosts and Goblins, Ghouls and Ghosts, goes through a ton of different formats. But you are a knight named Arthur. Your girlfriend, fiance, whatever the hell, gets kidnapped. Princess Prinprin, or Guinevere, depending on
region.
That's the word I'm looking for.
There you go. I got you.
Gets kidnapped by a demon king, and you go out and fight demons to save her. And the big thing about this game is it's tough as nails, and when you get hit, you lose your armor and run around in your underwear, which is hilarious. Or at least
absolutely.
I thought it was hilarious when I was a kid. Well,
yeah. No, it still is.
Yeah, and it's this first one. This was not my first influence with this game. I actually didn't really know about this series before Super Nintendo was the first time I learned about this. But we'll get to that in a little bit, because that's the third one in the series. Yeah, this game, going back and playing it, I went back and played the NES version, which I didn't really care for very much, and then I played the arcade version, and I kind of understood a little bit better. But you have a fun history with this game, right, Dean?
Yeah. So 2 years ago, we had an open spot for our trusty handy dandy Pete-a-thon that we do, Pain in the Ass-a-thon. And I decided that it would be a good idea to fill that with Ghosts and Goblins. Because, I mean, how fucking hard could it be? It's a hard game. That's what I hear. But how hard could it be? I learned so much about myself that day and how little patience I have for really difficult games.
Did you guys make it to level 3 in that?
No, we made it to level 2.
It was level 2, yeah.
Yeah, with the crapping unicorns or ogres or whatever they were called in that game. I don't remember. But I played the NES version that day for, had to be 3 or 4 hours. And like you.
It was 3.
Yeah, and like you, at the end of it, I didn't really appreciate the game anymore because. Like, when I was younger, I was told, you know, Ghosts and Goblins is a great game, blah, 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 and you should play it and everything. And I just thought, yeah, all right, sure, I'll get around to it. And I thought the NES one was a good release. It's really not. Like, if you want to really experience this game, the release that you should be looking at is the arcade one. Or yeah. What I did see was I also checked out the Saturn release. And that also looks really good, though I think that's like a Capcom.
It's in a collection. Yeah, it's just it's a Capcom compilation, and it's the arcade version. So,
yeah, that one. That one looks really nice.
Yeah, any port of the arcade version is really what you want to look for. You know, it's on. I think it's up on Xbox Live. I know it's on the Wii Virtual Console, and it's still not the. It's a very obtuse game. It's just it's hard for the sake of being hard.
Oh yeah, I mean, it was quarter eater.
Yeah, it was exactly. It was a quarter muncher. It was designed to piss you off and steal your quarters and be hardcore. But you know, but it's got a really cool world. It really set up this world. These characters, like Arthur, is just such a ridiculous character. He's just this very bold. Knight in shining armor, and then you can run around in strawberry boxers, which they're not hearts, they're strawberries.
Strawberries, yeah. I thought it was cool that, you know, like once you get damaged, your armor just explodes off and then you're exposed.
You're done. Yeah. You're running around your underwear, and then you get hit again and you're turned into a pile of bones.
Yep.
Yep.
The monster designs are so crazy in this.
They had a lot of really cool stuff in the game. I remember the end boss is called a unicorn, which I don't know if this is in the arcade game, but I know in the NES port, it doesn't look anything like a unicorn. It looks like a fat pig monster.
A big fat dude. He looks. It's this. The NES version is a fairly faithful port. It's just, it's like a really old style arcade port, you know, it was just not up to snuff. And later in the NES's life cycle, they could have definitely done a better job. But this was like comparing, it was almost like an Atari 2600 port, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Not, it wasn't showing off the best of what the NES was capable of visually. And it just feels very simplistic. But the Game Boy Color port was essentially the NES port, if I remember correctly. I've never actually played the C64 or any of the other, you know, PC type ones, but I've watched the video of on that Let's Compare thing, and they just look really, really difficult to play. But it is a classic. It is well worth your time to track down and try to play. Really, either watch that cool comparison video, and if you want to play it, track down the arcade version. That is the one you want to wrap your hands around.
That's the best advice anyone could give.
Indeed. All right, so let's see. That was 85. Then we fast forward to 1988, and we got a sequel to Ghosts and Goblins called Ghouls and Ghosts. This one came out in the arcades first, I believe.
Yeah, you're right.
And then was ported to various platforms, including the Amiga, Amstrad, CPC, Atari ST, Commodore 64, Sharp 68000, Sega Saturn, Xbox, PlayStation, PlayStation 2, PSP, Super Graphics, Master System, Genesis, Virtual Console, and ZX Spectrum. The Genesis version, if I'm not guessing incorrectly, the Genesis version was the one that most people played outside of the arcade. Because it was the freaking Sega Genesis, and it was a great port of the arcade game too. It's very, very, very good conversion.
Yeah. Actually, you and I were talking about this because I was kind of picking your brain about this when I was deciding what Ghosts and Ghouls and Ghosts, Ghosts and Goblins, Super Ghouls and Ghosts, like which game to play, and I brought up the Sega port. And, you know, I didn't really know that there was a Ghouls and Ghosts and a Super Ghouls and Ghosts till I started looking into this a little deeper. And, yeah, I saw the Sega version of this. And, I mean, it looks really, really nice. It operates super well. Like, it looks like a great port of the game. And then I looked a little deeper because I was reading the Wikipedia page, and when you were talking about the releases, the Sharp, what is it, X68000, apparently that's a pixel-perfect port of the arcade game, which I thought was kind of cool. And I looked it up, and it looks amazing compared to whatever else was out at the time. That came out in 94, but I believe the Genesis and Mega Drive and Master System ones all came out around, like, 89, 90, so that's, like, 5 years before the Sharp one would have ever existed.
Well, I mean, it definitely improved the art direction. I mean, it's great. It is a definite marked improvement over the original. Not that the original arcade one had much of a problem, but man, when you look at the arcade version of this in comparison, it's just
step.
Yeah, it's a huge step up. It's a really nice looking game. So this one added the ability to shoot straight up, and I believe you can also shoot straight down when you jump in the air, which is kind of neat. I don't think this has the double jump in it, though. It did introduce things like the gold armor, so there was like different armor you could get, it would give you a magic ability in this one, which is kind of cool. The level designs were just creepy as hell, like great sound. It's just an awesome game. It's not one that I spend a ton of time with because, like I said, Super Ghouls and Ghosts was where I got my start. And Super Ghouls and Ghosts, I think, really changed things for the better. I prefer Super Ghouls and Ghosts to this game. I know there are some people that like this game better than Super Ghouls and Ghosts, and I feel like that's just got to be pure nostalgia on that one, because for as great as Ghouls and Ghosts is, there's things I like about Super Ghouls and Ghosts way better. Well, man, I'm watching gameplay of the arcade version of this, and like, yeah, the Genesis one is nice, but the arcade version is so cool looking. It's so good.
Yeah, the one thing that I noticed about this game, because, you know, while the video's on, I'm listening to the music, the music's not great in it. Like, it's just, it's really simplistic, I guess, and I compared to the Super Ghouls and Ghosts, or even Ghosts and Goblins, like, there's... I guess a lot more going on. Just even in the first level, it just sounds quiet, I guess.
It is. It's using. It's not using the most impressive instruments ever, and that is definitely something else to say about Super Ghouls and Ghosts when we get to that. Music in that game, but man, I'm looking at the monster designs. There's these, like, you know, monsters barfing all over the place, and
this game is cool. Did you get to the first boss? I think it's on the first level where it's like this huge green ogre, and like he rips off his own head and puts it on his hand.
Yeah, I love that monster. That was really cool. That's one of my favorite monster designs. He's hysterical. I don't really know what else to say about this one. It sticks. It's a very nice evolution because it sticks real close to the. It sticks real close to the design of the original game, in as far as like basic gameplay goes. But it adds so many cool elements, like the ability to throw your weapons up, and the get increased magic abilities with the gold armor. It really was a great sequel. It was as good as you could possibly expect a sequel to something like this to be. It was very 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 impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. One more cool thing was the Master System, the 8-bit version for the Sega systems. They added a secret shop where you could get upgrades, which I thought was kind of cool because this game doesn't really have stuff like that in any other version.
The treasure chests, but yeah, there's no real upgrade system like you're talking about. Yeah. I did want to mention the treasure chests. No, they were in the first one, too. Ignore me.
Well, they weren't treasure chests. They were, I think, like pots, maybe?
That's right, because there were ways to get other, different weapons. And I don't remember how it worked in the original one, and I should just look at a video of it, but I'm too busy poking through all the other one.
I think it was you either just killed bad guys and they dropped, or there were pots, like clay pots, and you got them that way. I'm pretty sure. I'm going off the NES version, so it could be different in the arcade one. But yeah,
but man, I'm looking
pots.
At a video of the Master System version of Ghosts and Goblins, and if you compare this to the NES version of Ghouls and Ghosts, it is night and day. Like, this is a really impressive port of this game. Really, really impressive. Well done to Capcom or whatever specific team ported this to Master System, because it is really impressive. The boss that rips off his head is like, the head just floats. He doesn't hold his head on his hand, but he's huge. Like, he looks just like him. And I'm looking at the Genesis one, and it's still pretty damn good port, but man, the arcade one just has so much more animation going on. It's slightly less choppy, and it's got just a lot more going on in the background. So let's move on to my favorite game in the series, Super Ghouls and Ghosts. Let's see here. Super Ghouls and Ghosts came out in 1991. I believe it did eventually hit the arc. There was an arcade version of it, but I also think this was actually a Super NES game to begin with.
It was.
And this is what this game added. It took away the ability to shoot your weapon straight up, but it did add the double jump, which I think is wonderful. The double jump is so ingrained in the character of the Ghosts and Goblins franchise now. It's weird going back and playing the first two where it didn't exist, because the double jump just adds so much to this game, because it's such a unique type of double jump, because it's like in this game it's almost like in the original Castlevania, where when you make a jump you have to commit to that jump, because
your arc is set. And
You can do two totally different arcs for each jump. If you want to jump forward for the first one and then straight up for the second one, you can. Like, the second jump is like a completely start from scratch jump, It doesn't make any sense, like, at all, but that's fine, because we're playing a game about, you know, goblins and monsters and running around in your underwear. It took the armor system that they started in Ghouls and Ghosts and upgraded it to three different types of armor and two shields. So you get you have your regular weapon, and then you can find the hidden treasure chest and get a blue armor, which will make your weapons super special. Then you find another treasure chest that upgrades you to the gold armor, which allows you to use magic. And then after that, you can get a stronger shield. And the other thing that comes out of treasure chest, which I totally forgot to mention in the last one, is the wizard that comes out of the treasure chest and turns you into something.
That guy's a fat bag of dicks. I think in Ghouls and Ghosts, it was he turns you into a duck or an old man, and Super Ghouls and Ghosts, he turns you into a baby.
Or a woman.
Or a woman. Okay, yes. There you go.
Just a maiden. The baby is hysterical. You just crawl around as a baby for like a minute and hope to not die. It's hysterical. So let's see. Super Ghouls and Ghosts was released in 1991. It was for Super NES, Sega Saturn, PlayStation, PS2, Xbox, Game Boy Advance, which we'll talk about in a minute, PSP, Virtual Console, Xbox Live Arcade, and PlayStation Network. God damn, I love this game. It is still one of the most beautiful Super NES games. The art direction in this game is insane. The level designs are just, they're just gorgeous, and the music is totally next level. The music is unfathomably good in this game.
Absolutely. It's funny because I'm going to say almost all the first levels have the same theme there.
Yeah, I think they all do. I'm pretty sure they all do. At least all the mainline ones.
Right. And going up to this point, this is absolutely the best version. It sounds fantastic.
It's really full. Yeah. The pipe organ sound, it's gorgeous. It's wonderful and spooky and eerie and all the sound effects. Like when you get to that spot halfway through the level and all the skulls are getting barfed out of those giant statue things. Like, I love it. I love it so much.
It's a really, really solid game. The platform's built great. The only thing I had issue with in the Super Nintendo release was the frame slowdowns, and it's mainly because I've been playing so many new games where, you know, frame rate slowdowns don't happen that much anymore, and I go to something like this, and it kind of threw me off.
Capcom didn't give a single shit about that. They're like, nah, screw it. Make it huge. I don't, it'll slow down. People deal with it. Whatever.
Coming into this, it was a little weird. And on the Super NES Classic port that they made for it, or just ported over, same thing still there. They didn't change a damn thing, which it should be because,
I would have a weird time playing this game without the slowdown.
Without it, right.
Because, like, I know where it's going to slow down. I have so much of this game just ingrained into my memory. And this is also a game, I think you have to do this with all of them. I'm not positive, because I've never beaten the other ones. But this game, you definitely have to beat twice. And it's... Wow, I played the hell out of this game when I was younger. I just played it so much so that I would be able to beat it. And I remember the first time beating that last boss, and then the girl shows up and is like, you got to go back and get the goddess bracelet and beat the whole game over again. And I'm like, are you kidding me? It just starts you back at the beginning of the first level. And she's like, you got to find the goddess bracelet. It's the only way you can kill the last boss. I'm like, all right. So I go... You get the treasure chest, and there's the goddess bracelet. I'm like, all right, cool. Let's get the goddess bracelet. It is the worst item in the game.
What is it? Because I haven't beaten the game at all. So what does it do?
All right, so for me, I believe the best item to have in the game is the crossbow. The crossbow is phenomenal. When it's regular, it shoots in the upward diagonal direction, which is great for fighting against the red gargoyles.
Oh, yeah, and then the upgrade. Oof, man.
And the upgrade, the homing thing, is just wonderful. Yeah. The crossbow is the friggin' item to have, and it's the easiest way to get through the game is having the crossbow. You can also, its magic ability is the treasure chest finder, so you can, you know, just power that sucker up and find all the treasure chests and keep, you know, armor around in case you get hit, and you're just it's a good item to have. It's a great weapon. The goddess bracelet that they want you to beat this game with is a piece of shit. It throws a really impressive looking fireball that goes a little bit farther than Dan's Gadouken from Street Fighter Alpha.
Oh, that's the worst.
Now, think of playing the second stage on the pirate ship with the ghosts coming at you from all directions with Dan's Gadukin.
Yeah, no.
It's just like, no. Oh, screw you, game. Screw you forever.
And so they basically made it hard mode.
Exactly. You then have to go through. Well, I mean, you technically don't have to beat the whole thing with it. You just need to get the goddess bracelet before you get to the last boss.
Okay.
So I'll stick with the crossbow for a while, and then like towards the end of the game, I'll switch over to and find that goddess bracelet. Because if you beat the game without the goddess bracelet, they'll send you right back to the beginning again.
Oh God.
Oh, such a dick move. But oh man, when I think of all the crazy cool levels in this thing, like this was really taking advantage of mode 7. There's like a crazy boss that like mode 7 spins around you. There's a stage where you'll jump into these little cage things the whole stage is like this gray stuff, this gray brown stuff, and you jump into this little thing and a cage shows up around you, and then the whole stage turns this absolute hideous green and red with these spikes like poking through all the red stuff. Like it's so gross and it's all wiggling, and the whole stage rotates around like 90 degrees, and then the cage opens back up, and then you got to play part of the stage like where the spikes that were on the floor are now on the wall, and it's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then like after that stage, you go into a hole that's like in this giant creature's intestines, and the whole thing is like, every time the monster's walking, the whole stage shifts back and forth, kind of like that opening to Super Metroid, except like way faster.
Yeah.
It's incredible. I don't know how far you got into the game, but
third level.
Third level. All right, cool. That's Oh, what is the third level in the GBA one? All right, so let's pivot a little bit.
Okay.
There's the Game Boy Advance game where you have the option to kind of take different paths in that one, right?
I'm doing the standard mode, so I'm not entirely sure if that's
option. All right, yeah. The Game Boy Advance one, it's been a while since I've played it, but the GBA one has a couple of different modes, and the one mode just plays like Super Ghouls and Ghosts, but there's another mode that actually mixes things up where you'll get a choice at the end of levels to go to different stages, and a lot of those stages are stages from the Genesis game, from Ghouls and Ghosts, not Super Ghouls and Ghosts, which is so cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
I really would love them to port this. I wish there was like a newer version of this, because the only gripe I have with the GBA one is, one, the sound isn't quite as good as the Super Nintendo one, and two, the screen cropping that happens with the weird aspect ratio of GBA games. But all in all, it's really a really, really interesting port of this game. Contra did a similar thing on the GBA where you could play Contra the Alien Wars EX. They didn't have the Mode 7 top view levels in it, so they replaced them with levels from the Sega Genesis game Contra Hardcore, which was super awesome.
Oh, okay. That is cool.
Yeah, it's neat playing through those stages as Bill and Lance instead of the other like Wolf character or whatever the hell was in the Contra Hardcore. And it's similar playing Super Ghouls and Ghosts, playing Ghouls and Ghosts levels with a double jump and without the ability to shoot your weapons straight up. So it's a really, really interesting port. I love that they didn't just straight up port the game. They actually added something new to it, and I love it when they do stuff like that. Like Super Mario Brothers Deluxe, which was just in the Nintendo World Championships. Man, I loved playing that two-player mode with people. It was so fun seeing that being played again, because
that
I used to play the
neat.
Heck out of
that.
I loved
really
the two-player
cool
mode in that game.
Yeah, I watched a little bit of that, and I was like, wow, that is neat. And, I mean, we were also really happy with the outcome. So, I mean,
yes, we were. Yes, we were.
Okay.
Any final thoughts on Super Ghouls and Ghosts?
Yeah, I reckon if anyone wants to jump into this series in general, this is probably the most accessible one, I would say, to get, and then on top of it to play if you want that difficulty. The game we're, I believe, talking about next would probably be the game to play if you wanted maybe to just get the feel of it, but for it to be a lot easier. But absolutely. I my personal pick for the series, if you want to play like a Ghosts and Goblins, Super Ghouls and Ghosts game, this would be it.
Yeah, if you want to see what this series is about, Super Ghouls and Ghosts, I think, is the high point. In a series of high points, I don't think there's much in the way of bad games in this series. But yeah, that's the one that you want to go with. I completely agree. All right, we're going to take ourselves a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the rest of the games in this franchise and maybe just branch off and mention some of the offshoots, because there have been many of them, and they are interesting. You are listening to the Stone Age Gamer podcast from Geekade.com, so stick around. And now, here's a look at some of the other original content available right now at Geekade.com.
First up, with Geekade's 31 Days of Halloween upon us, Jonathan went in search of someone scary worthy of joining D-List and came up with Satan's Daughter. Satana has graced the pages of Marvel Comics since the 70s, teaming up with various heroes and testing her allegiance to her father by walking the line between good and evil. Find out all about her in this month's spooky installment of Welcome to the D-List, Satana.
Good job, Dean.
Holy shit!
Look at that. First run, well played.
I
got one more
during this recording, Dean, but fantastic, sir.
Then Halloween is only a few weeks away, and let me guess, you still don't have a costume, do you?
No,
I don't either. Well, don't worry. Whether the stores are all sold out or you're just a little short on cash or creativity, in my case, Karen has plenty of ideas on how to make your own contest-worthy costume out of items you own or can get cheap, and how to kick them up a notch if you're willing to spend a little more time and money. Check out Geeky DIY Halloween Costumes 2017 Edition, located in the Think Tank.
Oh, bring it home, Dean. Bring it home.
Bring it home, Dean. You can do it.
Finally, when you're chilling on a hayride, pumpkin spice latte in hand, you need some good tunes to really complete the picture. Whether your tastes run to Marilyn Manson, Pink, Neil Horan, or Kelly Clarkson, Janelle has the latest tracks to accompany all your autumn adventures. Read about albums from all these and more and Turn It Up, new music releases for October 2017.
Nailed it! You can catch all this great stuff plus tons of other articles, videos, podcasts, and more right now at Geekade.com.
I say we just cut it here. Call it a night.
It can't get any better. That's the high point.
That's it. And we are back. So before we go any further in our Ghosts and Goblins extravaganza here, I wanted to mention real quick the offshoots, which there were a couple. Primarily, I wanted to talk about the two major ones. Like, there were two actual series that kind of jumped out of this. Like, there was a bunch of weird, like, puzzle games and stuff that popped out of it. But really, you had two major offshoots. You had the Gargoyle's Quest series and the Maximo series. Gargoyle's Quest, I have more familiarity with. That's the first one was on Game Boy, second one was on NES, and then there was a port of it to the Game Boy, and then the third one was on Super Nintendo, which is Demon's Crest, which is freaking rad. So the first one, Gargoyle's Quest, black and white Game Boy, you play as the gargoyle that you hate. If you've ever played one of these games, you hate these friggin' red gargoyles, and in this game you play as him, and it is awesome. I was mentioning to Dean earlier you've never played any of these games, right? Like, you pretty much just discovered that these exist right now.
Yeah, and it's pretty amazing to me that you play as the bad guy from the previous iterations of these games. So I'm super happy to check these out in my spare time.
Oh yeah, you've got to give these a try. So I asked Dean if he had played Mutant Muds, because Mutant Muds is this great 3DS and I guess everything else in the world game. It's from Renegade Kid, who is the part of Renegade Kid that split off is now Atui, who did Chicken Wiggle. They did Mutant Muds. It's a really, really cool game, and Mutant Muds is a cross between Gargoyle's Quest and Virtual Boy Wario Land. So the character himself controls very similar to the way Firebrand controls in Gargoyle's Quest, where you jump and you press the kind of float button and he floats a little bit and then lands, and it's also kind of shoots fire the same way, you know, the little dude shoots his gun in Mutant Muds. These games are great. Really, really great. Gargoyle's Quest 2 for NES is one of those, like, really hard to find games. It's one of the more expensive NES titles out there, but If you can, let's say, legally emulate it somehow, and perhaps play it on a product that is sold on StoneAgeGamer.com, something that sounds like an EverDrive. If you can get your hands on a way to play this game, I can't recommend it enough. It's like a full-color, more expansive version of Gargoyle's Quest, which is just it's marvelous.
I'm totally going to download this on my Schmever Drive N4.
Yes, your Schmever Drive. Yeah. And then Demon's Crest like just took things even further. It's like this gorgeous Super Nintendo game with awesome music. It's just fantastic. Check out Demon's Crest. Also, one of the more expensive Super Nintendo games out there, but it was released on the Wii U Virtual Console officially, so you can definitely play Demon's Crest legally and officially without too much effort. Great offshoot series. Then you had Maximo, which it's like, I don't know, man. I didn't play a lot of these games. I really liked the idea of them more than actually playing them. They have a lot in common with the they say they're based on the Ghost and Goblins universe, but it's like,
meh.
Yeah, kind of like your character wears armor and can run around in his boxer shorts. And it's kind of spooky, like fighting ghouls and or ghosts and or goblins. But I feel like it's more of a tertiary connection. Like gameplay wise, it doesn't remind me of the Ghouls and Ghosts series at all. But there were two games. Again, I wasn't the hugest fan of the first one, so I never played the second one. There's Maximo Ghosts of Glory and Maximo vs. the Army of Zin, released on 2001, 2003 on PlayStation 2. I should really give them a try again sometime. Because I liked the idea of them, and I guess I was just a little soured because they weren't actual new Ghosts and Goblins game. Like,
I feel like you, Arthur. Man. No, yeah, I understand. Yeah, Arthur's a great character, and you know, for something to take. Because I mean, after the Super Nintendo one, more or less the game wasn't really out for a long time after that. And
it was a very long time. In fact, the first time I remembered seeing him. Since then, that really excited me was as an assist character in the first Marvel vs. Capcom.
Oh, that was pretty cool.
I was like, hey, he comes out and throws a couple of lances and then gets hit and runs away. That's hilarious. But I wished that he was a playable character, but it was really cool to see him in there. And then it was, you know, all the MVC 3 when they actually finally made him a playable character, which was really cool. So, yeah, there you go. Offshoots. Let's get back to the games.
Let's do it.
So, all right, let's blow through the rest of this because I'm tired and hungry, and I'm sure you are too. The next game on the list is Makaimura for WonderSwan, which is Ghosts and Goblins for WonderSwan. This is not an American game, as you may have figured.
I would have never guessed.
This came out in 1999. So there were Super Ghouls and Ghosts in 1991. Then it was re-released. That Game Boy Advance port that we were talking about that was interesting was in 2002, but that still wasn't a new game. It was just, you know, Super Ghouls and Ghosts with some fancy stuff mixed in. This game came out in 99, so it was a good long while before we got a different Ghosts and Goblins game. And this was, from what I can tell of it, because I haven't actually played it, I've just watched some video, it just seems to be an enhanced version of the original game. Like, you can swim in this game. It's got a really cool art direction. It seems to pull bits from... Yeah, no, I'm looking at it now, and it doesn't have the double jump, but it does seem to pull bits from Super Ghouls and Ghosts, like, you know, the crossbow and some of the animations, like the way the ghosts move and stuff. They look really similar to the ones in Super Ghouls and Ghosts. It's
a neat-looking game.
Yeah, it's really interesting... unique, at least seems that way, Ghosts and Goblins game for the freaking WonderSwan.
I don't know where the hell anyone's ever gonna find that, because I've from my travels I've never even really seen a WonderSwan emulator. I'm sure it's out there, but it's probably not the easiest thing to find or the ROM for it. So
I'm pretty sure I have this on my Raspberry Pi, actually.
Okay,
I'm gonna have to look into that, because I know I have WonderSwan games on there. I don't think I ever bothered looking for this.
This is really cool.
I'm genuinely curious.
Yeah, and it looks like it operates well. I mean, I don't know how well it would operate on a Raspberry Pi, but on the OEM equipment, it looks like it runs great for what it was. It kind of looks like borderline, like, black and white Neo Geo almost, like how I'd expect something like that to run on there.
Yeah, because it's got, oh yeah, like Neo Geo Pocket Color, except not a vertical screen, because that was really that system's downfall. It's well animated, too. Like, it looks really neat the way Arthur moves. It's not using the same sprite that they used for Ghouls and Ghosts and Super Ghouls and Ghosts. You know, the ability to swim really is interesting. These swimming levels are kind of funky looking. They're blowing my mind a little bit. And, you know, he has, like, just a little swinging animation the way he throws his arm. It's he's a little bit more fluidly animated in this than he is in the previous iterations. And the art direction is very, very stark. Like, all the lines are very thick. It's a very cool looking black and white game. I really want to try this now. So, moving on, the next proper sequel, because this was, again, only released in Japan on the Wonder Swan, and I feel like it doesn't look like it's really remixing much of those elements, but I don't know what I'm talking about. But the next proper sequel in America was Ultimate Ghosts and Goblins for PSP. Did you play this game?
I did, and you know what? When this came out, this was the first Ghosts and Goblins game I ever played, and I was like, this is really cool. I didn't understand, you know, anything about this, and not seeing some of the other games before, well, not seeing any of the other games before this, I was like, is this how the whole thing was, you know, like, and it
you're just firstly, constantly dying in all these games.
Well, I mean, firstly, if you play this on standard mode, you have more than your normal amount of lives, I believe. He mm-hmm. gets, like, I think 6 chances to get hit before he actually dies. So mm-hmm. while it's still difficult, it, like, pares down the difficulty a bit. And then even when you lose all your armor, you still resurrect in the same place instead of being jacked all the way back to the beginning.
You know, tossed back. The way I played this was hysterical, because I remember picking it up for the first time on PSP. I was so excited the day this came out. I was like, all right, let's play the shit out of this. I'm like, wow, they really, like, you can take all these hits and the weapons are more powerful. And like, oh, okay, I get it. They just ratcheted up the rest of the difficulty with more monsters and shit on screen to make up for the fact that you're more powerful.
Yeah. It's really cool. It's done really well. Like, they have that cutscene at the beginning that's super cool. It's all animated and everything.
Looks so great. It looks so good.
And Capcom has made the folly on the PSP of having these awesome games that ran kind of like hot garbage. Like Mega Man X Maverick Hunter looked really, really good, but it had so many slowdowns at points that I was like, why? And then I powered up, didn't have as
power
many.
Up but ran, I felt powered up ran just fine. Like the slowdowns don't really get to me that much when they're relatively uncommon. But I hear you on the Maverick Hunter thing. I wasn't nuts about Maverick Hunter because I'm such a nut for the first Mega Man X, particularly the way it looks, and I felt like
it was rough to kind of take that and mess with it.
Yeah, the polygonal designs just didn't have the same soul, I thought,
as
the original game.
I mean, the coolest thing was the cutscenes that they had in between.
Yeah, it was kind of neat. But, like, man, I'm looking at the polygonal design, and I'm, like, watching a gameplay video of Ultimate Ghosts and Goblins on PSP.
Oh, this
like,
totally blew everything else out of the water as far as
graphics.
It's
so cool looking. Like, it's kind of dated by today's standards, but the art direction on this is so in line with the previous entries in the series. Like, even all polygonal like this, it really matched up with the way, like, the shape of the leaves and the trees and the funky faces and stuff. It's such a really cool game. I want them to do an HD remake of this. I really want to play this on my TV.
This would be fantastic. And I mean, this was at a time when portable 3D games like this didn't really exist before this. Like, you had the Nintendo DS, which was the main competitor to this, and you couldn't get anything on the DS like this.
So having this
amount of graphics in your hand and like power was so amazing. It's just kind of shitty the PSP didn't do better.
I think it's because Capcom was one of the only people that were just genuinely killing it with the PSP. Most of my PSP library is the Capcom games. This and the two Mega Man games and Street Fighter Alpha Alpha 3 Max. And,
oh, that was great.
That was wonderful. And Power Stone Collection, like, these games
they
really worked handheld, whereas I feel like a lot of other companies were making just full-on console games
on the PSP.
The PSP, which at the time, like, now it's what I look for, like with Switch, and I'm looking for that out of a handheld now. But back then, it was, I think it was just because of the general nature of the way handhelds were back then. Like, I just didn't really want, I didn't want the full console experience on the go. And I think that's one of the things that works well with the Switch is that while it is the full handheld experience on the go, it is also the full experience. Sorry, the full console experience on the go. It is also sit on your and play it on your TV. So it's kind of the best
of both. You have that
worlds.
Option. Right. Yeah, exactly.
And the PSP did eventually get that like cable you could plug in, but it didn't look or function all that great.
From what I remember, it was just standard definition.
Yeah, it was just standard definition, and even then, it never looked right.
Right.
I remember trying to play Street Fighter Alpha 3 Max that way, and it just never really sat right with me. And I don't know, man. I feel like this is such a cool game. This is Ultimate Ghosts and Goblins is such a cool game, and I really want to put more time into it. But it is essentially trapped on the PSP, which is kind of my problem with it, and one of the reasons I haven't put more time into it, because my PSP, my battery's exploded, so I don't have any way to play my PSP games right now until I go out and buy a new battery for PSP, and really, do I want to spend the money on that? Because as much as I want to play this game, I don't think I want to play it enough to spend money on a new battery for
it. And to play it on a PSP, you know,
exactly.
It's,
like,
it's
it
just
is,
going backwards.
It is a gorgeous screen. It is like the PSP is a great system, but you know, I have a Vita and I have a Switch, and for some reason, sometimes going back, especially to things around this generation, is just kind of tough. And I do love the PSP. I think it was like as a system, it was really great. The UMD was a terrible choice.
That was its major downfall, man. Did you work at GameStop or any game store during this?
I was working
at
Game Crazy during this time, and I can't even begin to tell you how many people brought the discs from the inside the UMD and said, "How do I put this on my PSP?"
Yeah, and it's like, well, you broke it, so congrats.
Yeah,
I people
now
trade
you
them...
don't put it in your PSP. You just don't.
I remember people would try and trade them in, and the cases would be cracked because the way they were held in was there's a tab on the top and a tab on the bottom. And it would catch on the hinge of the game where it was put together, where the two halves were pressed together.
Yeah, the seam. And the seam was the cheapest seam in the history of anything. It was just, they would come apart when you looked at them funny. Like,
it would rip the game apart. And then, you know, it was almost broken anyway, essentially, by the time someone traded it in. But it really sucked. That was the biggest downfall of the system was the media that this stuff was on. Because eventually they're just going to break and, you know, you can't do anything about it.
Yeah, pretty much. Hey, look, I love the time I spent with my PSP, but
absolutely, I can agree with
I
you there.
I really wish that at the very least the Capcom games weren't really trapped on that system. And maybe they're not. Maybe I just don't know any better. Maybe they're all available on the PlayStation Network and I can play them on my TV if I had a PlayStation 4, but I would have to ask Dan that because he's a resident PlayStation goon.
It just says on here PlayStation Portable, and I mean they're pretty. Wikipedia is pretty quick on updating most things, so I'd have to imagine if this was on something else, we'd probably have seen it already.
Yeah, probably. Or if you were able to buy it on the PlayStation Network and play it on TV, because I feel like there was ability to buy Maverick Hunter on PlayStation Network. I don't know if it was like on PS3 compatible or what, but I know you could get that like on Vita, but just not powered up for some reason, which I thought was the better game. But
I loved Powered Up. Powered Up was great.
Yeah, Powered Up was awesome. All right, we're way off kilter here. All right, so to kind of wrap things up here, this is we're not going to go out on a high point. I'm not going to say that these last two games are bad because I've never played them, but I cannot imagine they're fantastic. In 2009, we got Ghosts and Goblins Gold Knights for iOS. And then in 2010, we got Gold Knights 2, also for iOS. I cannot imagine a world where playing a Ghosts and Goblins game with a digital D-pad and buttons is any kind of good time.
It was a long time ago. Well, I mean, for gaming, it was a long time ago, you know? So, this was, iPhone 4, maybe? You know, regardless.
It was pretty early, yeah.
It was a time when a lot of, you know, peripherals and stuff didn't exist or other ways to maybe control this. And so everything was on the screen. So this is what they thought would be, you know, in and would work. And from some of the reviews that I read, I've heard that these games were pretty responsive on whatever fucking iPhone or iOS device that they were playing on. But the games looked really dark, and the graphics didn't look great. They just looked okay. So
they seem to be based on the engine for Ultimate Ghosts and Goblins.
Yeah.
But I'm watching a video of it right now, and the buttons take up like half the play field,
which is
ridiculous.
That's the problem. Yeah, like everyone said it was responsive, but if you have your hands over the graphics, you know, what the hell's the point?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. This. No, I cannot imagine playing this. So I'm watching video for the first one. If I remember correctly, the second one was a marked improvement in the graphics department. Like, it just looked and ran way better. Yeah, it's much faster. I'm looking at it right now. It's considerably faster. It's still ugly. It's not great.
it looked very dark and muddy.
These are original Ghosts and Goblins games.
Yep.
I'm sad that these are iPhone games and that there's no option to play these on a game console, because that would be pretty swell. Because they don't look like bad, you know, badly designed games, but geez. Ghosts and Goblins is such a precise thing, you know. It's they are hardcore games that require precision platforming and action, and man, playing them on a digital, that's gotta be awful.
I'm with you. I'm a little sad that they didn't come out on other things, because I'm pretty sure this is the first iteration to have other playable characters.
It's Arthur
fucking cool,
and Lancelot, right?
Yeah, and then in the second one, it's Arthur and Percival.
Hmm. Oh, you know what? I totally forgot to mention this. Have you ever played the game Cannon Spike?
No.
Okay, I want you to look up Cannon Spike right now and take a look at the pure, unadulterated insanity that is Cannon Spike for the Sega Dreamcast. This is a top-down shooter that has the most insane character selection screen. All right, so you can play as Sheba, I don't know who he's from, or Simone, but you can also play as Charlie or Cammy from the Street Fighter series, or Arthur from Ghouls and Ghosts.
What? That's nuts.
This game does not make a lick of sense, and I think you can unlock Mega Man in it too, like original style, like original recipe Mega Man, and it's like this weird top-down shooter in the future, and you can run around as Arthur from Ghouls and Ghosts and just shoot, I don't know, robotic lances. He's in his gold armor, and it's this game is so insane. I wish I bought it. I remember playing it at my Funko Land and being like, I gotta get this game, and I was gonna wait until it got cheaper, and then it never got cheaper, and I'm sad because I don't have it now. But
this game does look really cool. I kind of wish I did own this. I'm sure it's crap tons of money now, because I have a Dreamcast. It's just
this is not an affordable game. Let's see.
Oh, they have a Red Riding Hood from Darkstalkers.
Yeah, BB Hood. Yeah, yeah. She's playable in there too. Yeah, it's a bunch of characters. But yeah, Arthur from Ghosts and Goblins. A loose disc goes for about $73.
Oh my god!
Complete is $160.
Fuck. All right. Yeah. So this is something I'm never gonna get.
Yeah. No, you're never gonna own this game unless you get super lucky, because it had a very low print run. This was a late Dreamcast game, like late Dreamcast game, and it is
2000. Wow. Yeah.
It is way more interesting than it is good.
Yeah, it just looks cool and stuff. It's something I'd like to see in person, but you know, it is what it is.
It is exactly what it is. Most things are. All right. Well, with that's it. That's our look back on the Ghosts and Goblins franchise for Geekade's 31 Days of Halloween. How do you feel, Dean?
Spooky.
spooky, as do I. I feel like I want to turn on my Raspberry Pi and see if I can play that Wonderswan Ghost and Goblins game.
I think I'm going to have to find a way to play that, because that looked really fucking cool.
It does look really fucking cool. And yeah, that's it. So, all right, that's our show. Thank you again for filling in for Dan, Mr. Dean.
Of course.
Join us next week when Dan and I will be concluding our 31 Days of Halloween retrospective with the Splatterhouse episode we were supposed to do tonight. It should be lots and lots of fun listening to Dan talk about the game and me, for a change, really not having much of a clue what I'm talking about. What do you mean, for a change? I never know what I'm talking about. Let's see. Where were we? Once again, you can get in touch with us at mail@geekade.com, as well as all flavors of social media that we inhabit. You can like us on Facebook, find us on Instagram at Geekade, subscribe to our YouTube and Twitch channels for all our latest video content, and follow us on Twitter at @_Geekade. You can also find us individually on Twitter. I'm at Geekade Chris, that's Geekade K-R-I-S. Dan is at Geekade Dan, that's Geekade D-A-N. And Dean, where are you on the Twitterverse?
I am at Kimono_Vestlord, totally rocking my OG handle.
Your OG. Well done. If you're interested in more information about anything we discussed here tonight, be sure to check out our show notes. And while you're at it, you can also subscribe to this and any of our other wonderful podcasts on iTunes or Stitcher, or if you're super nice, you can leave us a review, because any and all feedback is welcome and appreciated. We'd also like to thank our intrepid editor, Evan, for making the show listenable for all you folks. And we'd also like to thank Mark TDK Knight for our show's theme song. You can check him out on SoundCloud and Bandcamp, or his website, which we have a link to, again, in the show notes. One more time, always remember to keep your eyes on Geekade.com, where we post more fresh original content all the time. That's it, everybody. Thank you again, Dean, for joining us. And on behalf of myself and Dan, and what the hey, Dean too, keep playing games.